Welcome to Rooster Radio, a broadcast dedicated to supporting and promoting local artists in the Gaston County and surrounding areas.
Some of my closest friends before I opened this place up, I've never talked to anymore. They won't support my business. They don't care about what we do. And this is my life. And yeah. One guy told me, he's like, that's all you fucking talk about anymore. I'm like, well, yeah, this is what I do. It's kind of the point.
Yeah. I get the same thing all the time with the groups. Mm-hmm. The people I was friends with before joining it now, all of a sudden it became, everything's about the band. All you talk about is when the next practice is, when the next show is. Like, yeah, it's because I'm going into this full-time, you know?
And when something lights your fire, and that's something that you really like doing, of course, that's what you're going to talk about.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm getting, you know, not to sound selfish about it, but I'm getting much more out of my friendships now than I ever was before. Like, the people...
Oh, yeah.
Like, I figured out a way to... Like, you know, they always say you do what you love, right? I figured out a way to do that and surround myself with people that, you know, like, I was never very – I didn't have artistic talent. I just always loved and appreciated the arts and music and stuff. Yeah. And to be able to surround myself with this group of people, it's fucking awesome. You know, like, these are my people.
Yeah.
You know, I can relate to these people. You know, I can't relate to a guy that – manages rich people's money and plays golf on Saturdays. Like, that's not, I have no idea what that life is like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But you know, it's the old saying, they say a stranger will support you faster than your best friend will.
It's true. And don't get me wrong, I don't harbor any ill will or nothing toward anybody about it. It's just like, you know, it's not.
Call it how you see it.
What's that?
You call it how you see it.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically.
This is what I'm doing now. Like, either you can be a part of this community or not. I don't really, I mean, I want you to, but if you don't, I don't care. Like, do whatever makes you happy.
Yeah.
You know? And speaking of making you happy, let's talk about Fury 58. Look at this camera right there. Introduce yourself to the audience.
All right. I'm Lane. I'm lead guitarist.
Frost, lead vocals.
I'm Austin. I play drums.
I'm Dalton. I'm the bass player.
What, Dalton?
Could you speak up?
What'd you say, Dalton?
I said, I'm Dalton, and I'm the bass player.
Okay.
Got it.
Thank you. Awesome.
Do you have bass player syndrome or something? Like, have they beat you into submission? So quiet.
It was pretty easy.
Damn, you just call him duty like that?
Oh, he's the youngest. He's got to take it. Oh, okay. he took my spot, you know.
So you guys are from Hickory. All of you from Hickory?
Yeah, around the same area. We're within, like, 10-mile radius.
Well, whose brainchild is? Who came up with the idea to, like, because you have a very intentional sound.
I say Mr. Savage over here.
Yeah,
I
guess kind of, yeah.
Yeah, so talk about the inspiration, because I'm glad you reached out to be on the show. And for those who don't know, Fury 58 will be here this Friday, opening for Spread Eagle, and Midnight Madness will also be on that show. Midnight Massacre will be on that show.
These are our boys.
Yeah, it's going to be a really fun show, and I'm glad you reached out, because you are one of the handful of bands in this area that are just doing something just completely different than everybody else.
Thank you.
But you're doing it with like this throwback style. So talk about that inspiration, like to do this specific type of music.
I think it kind of started out that way, but then we've been together, 2 years now?
Pretty much, 2 years.
Been together 2 years, and it kind of, everybody who is in the band, which Kyle isn't here with us right now, he's our other guitar player. Okay. Shout out to our boy. We all kind of have, like, I would say different things that we absolutely love musically. Like, I'm a big 80s guy, but I also love, modern stuff like Falling in Reverse, Escape to Fate. And that's like his cup of tea. Mm-hmm. And like
more of the modern stuff.
Yeah. And
I also like 80s stuff too, Taylor. Don't get that wrong.
Yeah, he does. He does. And, old Lane over there, he likes
everything.
Yeah.
Everything. Anything under the sun. If it tickles my ears, I want to listen to it. Yeah.
If the doctor...
That kind of shows, too, with your guitar playing style, because you do have an ability to play anything.
Thank you.
It's been fun to watch. Awesome. It really has.
It's been fun for us, too. Every single time that we play here, it's always... It gets more fun each time. And, honestly, every time we play, we're just looking forward to coming back again, because we know the crowd's always going to be great. The staff here is great. The other bands that play are great. It's always a guaranteed fun time here, really. But in terms of, you're asking sort of like the whole main vision of the band, I think that sort of in terms of the themes of it, like obviously we're a very horror influenced kind of band too, which also falls under our love of classic 80s stuff, 80s horror movies. I mean, even the name Fury 58, comes from, of course, the movie Christine.
How you guys are younger. How did you get into 80s? What was your introduction into like that 80s metal type?
Being poor.
That helps.
Pretty much my introduction to it was, not having any money as a kid. And so me and my buddy, who we actually... my first band ever was with, we grew up together. We went to elementary school. We've been to kindergarten together. And so him and me, we pretty much spent every weekend together. And his dad would take us to the flea markets, and we didn't have shit for money. So we would go, and nowadays they're like expensive as shit. But back in the day, you go to the flea market and a cassette would be like 10 cents.
Oh, yeah, you could rack up.
Yeah. So we would just go, and we would go and look at these cassettes or vinyls, which vinyls are super expensive now, but vinyls back then would be like, oh, we'll sell to you $5.
Yeah.
And we'd just rack in every weekend. And we'd just sit around in my buddy's house, and we'd just listen to all these albums. And most of them were on cassette, half of them were on vinyl, and that was it. That was pretty much what started it.
So out of those 80s bands, who was your biggest influence?
Oh, the Crew.
100%.
Okay. 100%. Look, just visually, I see it.
Yeah,
visually. Yeah,
I think anyone who has seen us live or heard any of our stuff, it's probably not too far of a stretch of the imagination connecting the dots for who our biggest influences are.
That's what my husband was really excited when he saw the channel. He's like, I don't know who they are, and I think this was Bruce Stock last year, and he's like, I'm gonna look them up. He's like, I like these guys.
The first time you played here, I didn't know who you guys were either, and the first note I heard you guys play, I was walking up the hallway here, and you guys had just taken stage, and you started playing, and immediately you grabbed my attention. I was like, I walked around the corner and saw, I mean, sorry, but you guys are kind of babies to me. Like, you're so young. And I was like, what's happening? What's going on right now? And it was just so impressive. It was so encouraging, too, to see such youth, a band of such youth playing this style of music. It's very cool. And then you guys are bringing the energy every time you play. I mean, I assume all your live shows are like that. You must be having a blast doing what you're doing right now.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I definitely think that's the most overlooked part of playing music, is being able to connect with the crowd with your energy. Because the music, it carries so much, but we're all visual creatures. You got to give them something to look at to be able to, like, really drive it home.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, who usually wears the mohawk?
He was formerly in the band.
Oh, yeah. My bad.
No longer with us.
No, I love that. I love that you have that philosophy. I mean, like, it matters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could be the best guitar player in the world, but if you're just standing there,
Yeah, or if you're wearing something boring, you know.
Yeah, right.
We want to not only be fun to listen to, but, you know, we want to have the visual aspect because you want to have something cool to look at, too, whether that's with our live show or with our artwork for, like, our cover artwork and stuff. It's like, I know when I was growing up, at least, and listening to music on actual CDs, one of the things that I always enjoyed the most. Yeah, I did actually have money. But one
you
of
got
my
to go to Walmart and get CDs.
Yeah, Best Buy, yeah. But one of my favorite things to do while I was listening to it would be to study the artwork, you know, on the case and take out the booklet and look at all the pictures of the band and see how they look.
And that was one of my favorite things to do when I was a teenager.
I miss doing that, yeah.
Yeah, I would, you know, not to step on you, but like when I was a teenager coming up in the 90s, there were a couple of record, like music stores that you would go to get the new stuff. And like that feeling like getting that new fresh album and you pulling out the book and you're reading the lyrics.
Trying to get the damn sticker off the top of it just to open it.
I don't miss doing that.
Yeah. No, I don't either. But, you know, that was the anticipation to get into the book inside.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
But, like, it's like a whole experience, like, when a new album comes out. And then, like, what would be really cool is, like, you'd see an album. Like, there were times where I would buy an album just because the cover looked so cool.
Oh, yeah, there's been plenty of times I've done that.
And that'll burn you. It'll burn you.
You can also be surprised. Yeah. So you're like, oh, this is good.
Yeah. To me, I always just, when a band has an interesting look or an interesting visual aspect to them, it makes you want to learn more about them. Like, okay, why did they go with this look? Who are their influences on it? Mm-hmm. And with me, even before getting into playing live music, my background was actually in theater. And then eventually musical theater.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, from the time that I was 5 years old, my mom put me in acting classes, and I did that. And up until I started doing music full time, which was when I was about 14, 15 years old. So for 10 years, I was just a theater guy. So a lot of the performance aspect of it, whether it be the choreography or the costumes, the makeup, all the visuals, a lot of that comes from my theater background, really.
What was your favorite musical you did?
Probably either 101 Dalmatians or Cinderella. They were both pretty fun.
Okay.
He was the Dalmatian.
No, actually, I was the cat.
Really?
Yeah.
Even better.
And more fitting.
Yeah. What about you? What's your background, Mike?
So, I've always been around music since I was a kid. Growing up, we'd rent a boat, go out on the lake or something, and my earliest memories would have been same old situation, playing from the radio in that old boat, swim around on a hot day, and that really sparked my love for rock and roll. And when I was
Aerosmith gets overlooked.
They get
slept on a lot in the conversations of like the great rock bands. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because
I love Aerosmith.
They did it for so long.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I remember "Eat the Rich." What's the name of the album with the cow on it? It starts out with the big burp and
God dang it!
Yeah. I know exactly what album you're talking about.
I was a teenager when that album came out, and like it was like that's one of their best works, and it's like late in their career.
It's gonna bug me.
That's one thing about Aerosmith. They definitely went with the times and kept it rolling.
Yeah, right. They age gracefully.
That's hard to do. Not a lot of bands can do that. You know, you think about it. You got Rolling Stones. Get a grip. That's what it was called.
Yep, that was it.
Yeah, Rolling Stones did it well. They were able to like stay relevant in different eras, different times of music. The Beatles were the Beatles.
Yeah.
But they never really changed. You know, they did different concepts, but you know, they kind of had the same basic sound. Aerosmith's one of those bands too. Mm-hmm. Do you see yourself like mixing it up at all? Like to stay, like do you have a hard line in terms of like where you want your art to go, or are you kind of open to evolution?
We're 100% open.
We're definitely
to evolution.
Open to evolution. When it comes to my writing in general, I draw a lot from a lot of jazz music when it comes to it, because there's just a different tonality you get in a lot of those chords, and like it's not being experimented with too much. You see a lot of like drop tune guitars and just power chords in a lot of rock music. And I think if we all branch out of that a little more, it becomes a little more interesting than just.
It goes in waves. Like, yeah. You know, like you'll have like a period of time where like everything starts to sound similar, you know, and then a certain band will break out and do something different.
Then everyone wants to sound like them.
Yeah, which is cool, you know, but like you don't want to hear the same thing over and over again. Right?
Yeah, of course.
There's
not.
Days where I wake up and all I want to listen to all day is hip hop. You know what I'm saying? Like, and there's days where, you know, I want to put on like some old country music. You know? But most days I want to listen to some heavy music.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned bands that have, you know, been around for decades and been able to evolve and adapt their sound. It honestly, just to add on to what you're saying about how amazing it is that bands like Aerosmith or Rolling Stones can do that is. You look at it and, like, you see, oh, 50 years, that sounds like a long time. But you don't realize how long it is until you're in a band. And we've been around for, like we said, 2 years. That 2 years already feels like it's been an eternity, in a good way. I mean that in a good way. But you think just in 2 years, there's already been a good bit of evolution in our sound while still sticking with the main consistent theme.
Have you guys had a conversation about, like, how to stick together as the years go by, as you guys get older and grow, and at some point you're going to start families and things like that. Yeah. Have you had that conversation yet about like this, like we
the
need
what
to,
if?
Yeah, like oh, not, yeah. Not just the what if, but like this is how we need to handle like adversity and stuff like that. Yeah.
We've had plenty of conversations and differences over the years, even though we've only been a band for 2 years, we've all known each other for a very long time and been in different bands with each other, different lineups. Me and him, we've known each other for almost 10 years now, actually.
Well, the reason I asked the question is because you have an opportunity and you have like a road in front of you. You guys could be around for a long time doing what you do because what you're doing is so different than everybody else. And you have that longevity thing in you. The question is, can you handle the emotional, the mental, the physical of growing together as a band and as human beings and, you know, basically being a family?
I mean, like with just like with a family, there's been ups and downs here and there already just in the brief, in the grand scheme of things, time we've been together. We've had our differences here and there, and we've had some pretty heated, some pretty serious discussions about some of those differences, and it's made us realize that every time that happens, we just grow stronger and grow closer anyway because we learn how to overcome that obstacle. And, you know, we all have personal choices in our lives that some of us may not agree with or differences, but at the end of the day, we all want to do what's best for the group, what's best for the band, and what's best for each other. So yeah. I know that we'd all do anything for this band, really.
Yeah, when it comes to the music, like, when you have so much drive and love for it, there's very little that will actually get in your way, I feel like.
Yeah, I think, not to turn it into a therapy session, but it's always, well, I mean, for real, it's like marriage. This coming from an old guy who's married successfully, you know, happily married. You know, it's a respect thing. Like, I'm never going to call my wife names. I'm never going to dismiss her, whatever it is she's got going on, like, it doesn't matter. And, like, having that level of respect for each other and never, like, going there, never, like, getting nasty with each other, that's what keeps those communication lines open. Like, neither one of us is shutting down because if I say this, this is how she's going to react. Or, you know what I mean? Like, being able to be open and honest with each other is really, for me, what's been the key. And it seems like that would be a good policy for a band as well. Because I want to see you stick around. I want to see you guys go places.
We plan to, 100%.
I feel like a lot of bands, I don't know how they feel about hearing this, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's your brand, really. It's your business. And, you know, if you want your business to survive, kind of like what we were talking about earlier with the rooster. if you want your business to survive, you got to work together. And you got to overcome obstacles and hopefully make the brand succeed.
Yeah, you're on the right path for sure.
Thank you.
Has Hickory, you know, do you get much attention or love up there in terms of places to play and things like that? Have you been well received by the community?
In Hickory, in particular, actually very well received. We actually placed second in a battle of the bands several months ago, which led to an amazing opportunity that we've been doing up there at the Gateway Pub in Hickory. We've been we were offered to play there throughout the entire year of this year. So we're playing there.
Like a once-a-month gig or something?
Pretty much, yeah. Once, twice a month kind of thing. We'll actually be playing there next on April 20th. We'll be there with Deep Rest and Stephen Childers. So make sure you guys come out and see that.
Nice.
So, yeah, the reception in Hickory's been, I'd say, pretty good.
And the premiere.
Yeah. The premiere as well, yeah.
How is that spot? Like, I'd love to – at some point I'm going to go to a show up there. Like, I know they're a lot bigger than us, and they have the – they can hold a whole lot more people. Mm-hmm. And I see that they've made some pretty big-time bookings mm-hmm. here and there. Are they fun to work with?
We had pretty high expectations going in, and they – at least for me personally, they blew away all my expectations. Nice. They treated us super well. The staff was great. The venue itself was great. We had a blast up there, and we can't wait to do it again.
And we were one of the first local bands to play in that venue. So that's exciting.
That's cool. That's special.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah. We were really lucky to get that opportunity, and honestly, I think the crowd liked us and went over really well, mm-hmm. so we can't wait to do it again.
I really hope they continue to push that place a lot, because they have a lot of potential to grow, just like, gosh, you guys have grown in just the little time that you guys have been around.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's the result of hard work.
Yeah. Dude. It shows.
I hope the same for them, because it seems like after COVID, a lot of venues were done. It seems like a lot were done. But now it seems like we're coming back slowly
but
surely.
It did start to feel like I was saying this, like, right around the time we opened, I was kind of going around telling people, like, I think there's like a percentage of the population that we're just never going to see in public again.
Yeah.
It started to feel like that just some people have just decided that they're going to stay in COVID mode the rest of their life. Yeah. And maybe that's true, maybe it's not. We're finally starting to see more consistency with you know, crowds coming in and stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's weird. It's weird, like, what people will respond to and what they won't, you know?
Yeah.
Like, live music, to me, like, I can't live without live music. Like, you take that away, you're not going to see a show for 2 years, that sucked.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that's my church, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, so hopefully we'll continue to see the crowds grow.
Yeah.
You know, have you played an empty room yet?
Honestly, no.
We've never had it.
Yeah.
Oh, lucky you.
Yeah,
that's a good omen right there.
Now, if you decide to take a tour, that might happen. Just give you a hint.
100%.
You go to a different state, that might happen.
Speaking of touring, have y'all even started talking about getting out of North Carolina? And
We've actually been out of North Carolina a couple times.
Yeah, so
we've been to Virginia a couple times. We were just there last weekend, actually.
Yeah, we're playing up towards Virginia Tech last weekend.
Okay, mm-hmm. cool.
Nice.
Yeah. And the crowds have actually been very surprisingly receptive up there, too. We've only played Virginia twice, and when we were there last weekend, I kind of took the risk and asked the question of the crowds, like, how many of you seen Fury 58 before or heard of Fury 58 before? And it was a surprisingly good reception.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, it blew my mind. Like, I couldn't even hide my reaction on stage. Like, wow, really? That many? Okay.
Yeah.
Guess we're doing something right.
Yeah.
Amfest really helped us out with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Adam and those guys that were running that really helped us out. And it seemed like a lot of people that were at Amfest were at that show. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. AJ is what introduced you to shout out to AJ and the Carolina Headbangers. Mm-hmm. He's the one that brought you guys in here. In fact, he's the one that's bringing you in again this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
AJ's one of those dudes where if he says the band's good, I believe him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like anytime AJ wants to book a show, I'm like, whatever you want, man. I trust that dude.
Yeah, because he doesn't bring in people who half-ass it. Yeah.
No, not at all. Full speed every time.
We're all hungry.
How'd y'all get hooked up with the Headbangers?
Well, I guess that's on me. So me and AJ, we go back a few years now. We go back to a band that I was before this. So probably about
3-4 years.
About 4 years ago. I was in another band, and AJ really liked that band. And through that whole time, me and AJ became really, really tight. Like, I consider him one of my best friends. We're just homies. And through that, you know, he knew, and he he saw of where that was going, the direction of all that, and how it kind of went south. And he was like, well, now we're going to go do this. And he was, all right, cool, let's check it out. Let's see what we got going on. Yeah. And after that, he was pretty much, I dig it, man. It's kind of what you always talked about.
And I can honestly say we probably wouldn't be where we are now if it wasn't for his help and his support.
Nah.
AJ's backed us up since.
We love you, AJ.
Yeah, we love
we
you.
We love you, brother.
We know you're watching this. He's backed us up from the beginning, even before we had played a show, before we even had a song out, because he just knew. He trusted all of us enough just through knowing us and seeing other bands we've been in. He trusted and knew that this project was going to really be something once it got going. And he's helped us get it going, too, whether it be with coming out to the shows or booking some of these great shows that he's done. So, yeah, AJ's been, honestly, a huge pillar of support for Fury 58, and we're really grateful for that.
Yeah, him and Paul both are huge supporters, and they were both at the first show. Like, they were ready. They were like, let's see what you got going on. And they were there and loved it and kind of set the launch pad for where we're at now from the start.
Yeah. Right on, man. And are you starting to see more of the same people at your shows, or are you getting different crowds? Like, are you? What I'm asking is, are you developing a following? Are you starting to see that?
We're building a little bit of following. I've seen a lot of familiar faces, and especially here. Yeah, I'm so grateful to be able to meet everyone that we've ran into. But for the most part, all of our shows have had a pretty diverse crowd: new faces, old faces, and it just seems more and more each time we go.
What's the biggest comparison you get when some old timer comes up to you after the show and be like, you guys remind me of, or
is it Motley Crue?
Is it Crew?
Skid Row, Skid. Crew,
okay. Yeah.
Stuff like that. Some Avenged Sevenfold, yeah. Because even though we do have like a more 80s sounding style, so, you know, I would say we lean a lot into like the early post hardcore metalcore kind of area also, without all the breakdowns and jazz.
Even kind of some of the early 2000s rock stuff.
Yeah.
That's something we talked about at first when we first got together. It was really, really 80s driven.
Very.
And we kind of were just like, hey, let's not put ourselves in a box here, because if we put ourselves in a box and we go to these heavy shows, people will be like, what are they doing here? You know what I mean?
And we
kind of ended up wanting to be like, why can't we be everywhere? Let's be all the bands, you know.
We've tried to build up a repertoire of sound and songs that allow us to kind of fit in with almost any bill that we can.
Are you trying to keep everything horror themed, or do you find yourself writing?
It kind of just naturally happens, honestly. Visually,
that's got to be the theater kid thing in your eyes.
It is. Yeah.
He's a nerd.
Yeah, visually, we're always going to have the horror influence. So when we're actually writing the songs too, it just kind of comes through naturally in that way too. I don't think it's anything we're not super intentionally doing. We're not trying to be so on the nose with it that it comes off as corny or like a gimmick or anything like that. So if it doesn't naturally come into the music, then we don't push for it, you know.
It's kind of hard not to, though, because I mean, horror and metal are like brother and sister.
Yeah. I have a fascination with like a lot of the horror punk bands.
Yeah, me too.
There's even like there's a horror rockabilly band that I absolutely love, and my kid told me the other day, you know, it's one of my favorite bands. I'm like, yes.
I can see you guys spending like an entire weekend watching all of the Jason movies and then writing a concept album.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
I can see us doing that too.
I was just happy that it was the Christine, because that's one of my favorite horror movies.
Yeah. Is that your favorite horror movie? Like, do we have a favorite horror movie or series?
For me, my favorite series is probably the Hellraiser series.
Okay, right on.
Even like the straight to DVD ones that a lot of people love to talk shit about. But yeah, stuff like Hellraiser, American Psycho, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Jeepers Creepers, those are some of my favorites. Mm-hmm.
My favorite horror movie is probably the original Exorcist. That one scared the shit out of me when I was a child. When she sat up, it was
Can you imagine going to see that in the theater when it came out? Like how
some of the stories I've heard about it, yeah. They used to give out the vomit bags to people.
Yeah, because people were actually crazy. Getting sick in the theater. Yeah.
You never really see that happen with a lot of modern horror now.
That's what we need to start doing for our shows: give out vomit bags when they come and see us.
Favorite horror movie or series?
My hands down favorite horror movie is Halloween 2 specifically. Everybody loves the original, but I'm a Halloween 2 guy. I like Dick Warlock as Michael Myers, and I love the hospital setting, and it's just. Feels more grittier of a movie than the first one does. That's why I like it.
Dalton?
My favorite, ever since I saw it, was always the John Carpenter's The Thing.
I couldn't hear you.
I heard John Carpenter.
John Carpenter's The Thing?
Oh, The Thing.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. Did not see that coming. Nice.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, I like a lot of the corny 80s ones, like Puppet Master series. I just rewatched that the other week. I don't know why I loved those movies as a kid. I just thought they were so cool, like the little puppets terrorizing. Like just, I don't know.
The corny 80s horror movies that were almost like comedy and horror, mm-hmm. Yeah, really good.
There was a movie like, I don't know, 15 years ago or so called Drag Me to Hell.
I love that movie. That movie felt like
a throwback to like the 80s kind of corny horror.
Well, you know, you got Sam Raimi directing it, who, of course, everyone knows from the Evil Dead movies. Yeah. So, of course, he's going to have kind of that still old school influence on it. But, yeah, I love that movie. I think it's super underrated.
Yeah, it is. I agree. It's underrated. Like, it didn't get any kind of attention, but it's a really dope movie.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah. For sure.
My second favorite horror movie that all you metal and horror fans should watch is Demons.
That one is, and two?
One and two.
Yeah.
One and two.
See, I'm like an original horror. As a child, my favorite movie was Bela Lugosi's Dracula.
Nice.
I was that weird 5-year-old.
Oh, I'm a huge Universal Monster fan. My favorite Universal Monster is Creature, but...
Yeah.
So, I like all the Creature movies.
But, you know, the 80s throwback, it's not really a horror movie, but Monster Squad... I love that fucking movie so much. I actually have never seen that.
I don't think I've seen that either. Yeah.
Oh my god. The best line: Wolfman's got nards.
Yeah.
They kick him in the crotch to get him to go away, and they were like, "Oh, Wolfman's got nards." It's so stupid, but it's so great.
Yeah, I grew up in a house that like we weren't really allowed to watch that stuff, so like I had to. Watch it. Like, I'd be at, like, my grandparents' house, and I'd get a hold of my uncle's VHSs. That's how I saw Puppet Master movies was my aunt and uncles would have that stuff on tape. The Freddies, of course, were big when I was growing up, and the Jasons.
I had an obsession with the Crypt Keeper.
Now, there was a TV show, Tales from the Crypt, that was cool. That was, like, late night on, like, Saturdays. Yeah. A lot of that stuff I had to like sneak around to see when I was a kid. Were y'all the same way? Like, did y'all have to sneak around, or were your parents cool about it?
I definitely had to sneak around. Yeah. Around the time that I started getting into horror, I was about 10, 11 years old, and it was right around the time that YouTube was still new enough that they weren't as tight about people, you know, leaking movies on there. So I'd have to wait till like my parents weren't home and then go get on the computer and get on YouTube and find any like free horror movie I could find. But that was how I started seeing a lot of the first ones I saw when I was a kid.
My dad was convinced that there had to be one movie, horror movie, that scared me. So we spent a whole weekend, and he was like, "You gotta watch this one." So we were watching these. He's like, "I got one that's got to scare you." No. I was like, "You got to do better."
Dude, the one horror movie that really scared me as a kid, it's lame as fuck, but it was Arachnophobia.
That still terrifies me. So, but I'm a huge arachnophobe.
So I was like 8 years old, I think, when that movie came out, and I just wasn't ready to be like scared by spiders. Like, I already am scared of spiders. Like, I fucking hate spiders.
Yeah.
All right. And that movie, I mean, I had nightmares about spiders crawling all over the place after watching it. And it's not that scary of a movie. It's just the amount of spiders coming at you on the screen. It shook me as an 8-year-old kid. I couldn't shake that fear.
The practical effects in that movie are just so good, too, that it makes it more believable. I mean, the spiders look like actual ones you could see potentially in a house, which is what always scared me.
Same thing happened with me and Harry Potter when they had those giant spiders.
Really? Oh, yeah, those things were creepy as shit, weren't they?
Anything that size, I'm like, I'm gonna check out. I'm gonna turn this off.
I don't know if you got a healthy fear of spiders. That stuff's gonna freak you out.
Yeah. The only movie that ever just really disturbed me, and it's not a horror movie, it's The Beach with Leonardo DiCaprio. That movie is fucked up mentally.
Yeah,
it's like I'm never watching this, and I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What's the one he was in where he was like in a he went to a mental institution?
Shutter Island. Yeah,
Shutter Island. That movie was fucked, dude. Like I watched it at the end of the movie, I was like, shit, is he a patient or not? Like,
I remember watching The Beach and my mom, like, I'm sitting there, she goes, is this a movie you should be watching? And I'm like, probably not. This is screwed up.
You were how old?
I was like probably about 15. Yeah. I mean, I could have watched it. It was a bit, but the look of like disgust and horror on my face because it was just if you've seen it, it's pretty fucked up.
Some of them old Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies are hilarious too. Like gross, but in a hilarious way.
Yeah. See, I'm the weirdo that sits in a horror movie and like cheers, like run, dumbass, you know, or just laugh when they murder somebody.
I love it when people
in the movie theater look at me. They're like, "What the fuck?"
My favorite shit is when people run upstairs. Like that's my favorite. Yeah. I'm like, "Yep, there it is."
Yeah. I'll throw it back for you guys. Do you guys ever remember a place called Media Play?
Yes, of course.
Yes,
these youngins think we don't remember Media Play.
Yeah, I don't think it was a hot spot.
Anything back? They had everything.
True. So that's pretty much my introduction to horror movies is, once again, growing up poor.
Yeah.
me and my brothers, you know, my dad and my mom, they would take us to Media Play when we were kids. And DVDs were just a brand new thing, and they were expensive as shit.
Yeah.
They were 40, 50 bucks for a damn DVD. But the VHSs were going out, and you could go to Media Play, and you could get a VHS for like $4 or $5. And
it's like when they went out of business.
Yeah.
Are you old enough to remember Blockbuster Video?
Yeah. Oh,
so when they all started going out of business, like my wife and I have this massive collection of DVDs that we got for like $2, $3, $4, $5 each when all the movie stores were going out of business.
That's what we did with Media Play when they went out of business. We went in there and just like bought everything.
That's kind of how it was. When I was a kid, they used to just let me and my brothers, we'd go in the VHS section and be like, pick your movie every weekend. And that's how it was, kind of like what we said about albums. I'd just look at covers and be like, damn, that looks cool. Let's get that one.
Yeah, my dad would go rent movies and then not copy them.
My dad did the same thing.
Dude, that's what's wrong with America, man. Like having like that family movie night. So like that's kind of like the fiber of, you know,
the big, the ones with all the space and like enough for like three movies. Yeah.
Oh my God. That's what my dad would do. Yeah. Same thing.
Oh yeah.
He'd go to the video store and dub all that.
Right.
We had a one of those like my aunt and uncle when we were growing up, they had a movie rental store. Mm-hmm. Right, it's called Movie Hut, and they had a couple locations at one point, and they had like this little like rewinding like thing to rewind the tapes and stuff, and like they had all the equipment to like they would get a hold of these screener movies, and like you'd be watching this movie that was still in the theaters, but like the whole time there's some shit rolling across the screen. Mm-hmm. This is property of such and such. I'm like, I can't pay attention. Like I keep
reading that. Like,
You still see that on YouTube when people would leak movies on there. There'd be like some watermark or something on it, or the
so distracting.
In or out.
I got a bootleg of Paul one time, and there's somebody who gets up. They were filming it in the theater, and you can see somebody get up and walk out.
and of course, you know, let's take that story for full circle. Back then, I would hate the shit running across the screen, and now I'm like an old man that uses closed caption.
Yeah,
I'm watching TV. You use closed caption too?
Yeah,
it really helps because you're like
sometimes
you
I'm just
stuff.
Eating food too loudly.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. My wife and I will start to watch a movie or a stand-up special or something and be like, you want me to turn a closed caption off? She's like, no.
Yeah, no.
Oh, okay. So this isn't weird? Okay.
Never would I ever thought that would come in handy, but it does.
I know. I thought it was for deaf people. Like no, it's for old people.
It's for old people, too.
I don't know. The more years that I use it, the more I realize maybe I am just starting to become deaf, which is probably very likely considering
my line of work.
If
you have ADHD, that helps, too. Because your brain's doing other stuff, and you can read and watch at the same time as you're doing two things at once.
That's definitely what's going on with me.
Yeah. talking about longevity, do y'all do anything specific to like, you know, maintain like performance level, health, and things like that? And like anything you do, like with your diet or exercises, like because you know if you think about you want to do this for a long time, you got to stay in shape and all that kind of stuff.
I've been preaching it since day one. because
and you act like you're the only one that does.
No, what,
okay,
what,
we struck a nerve here. Here we go. Let's talk.
I mean, what you put in your body is ultimately what you're going to get out of it, in terms of staying hydrated, booze intake, all that stuff. I mean, it's.
I love that you looked at me when you said that.
It's okay. Booze intake. I'm up there with you,
dropping hints.
I'm up there with you.
Look,
but
he wants to try to pickle his inside like Mick Jagger. That's the only reason he stays like
But no, if you want to be sharp and playing at your best, I mean, it's really important to take care of your health too, especially, I mean, throwing out your neck every night you play. I mean, it adds up. I'll wake up some mornings and I'm just laying there stiff as a board. Can't move one inch. So it's really important. And I've definitely tried to get up on my health, mental and physical, since I joined the band, because the better I am, the better these guys are going to turn out too. So
I eat whatever I want and I work out when I feel like it. That's pretty much my diet, and it seems to be working. So, you know, I'm going to keep doing it.
I'm going to tell you something, buddy.
It'll catch up with
you. You got about a decade and a half of that.
Yep.
I've been hearing that for 20 years.
First thing, you'll get that little pot belly.
I've had that almost happen a couple times. Like, all right, we're going to nip that in the bud real quick. We're going to work out for 2 weeks and then go back to just hanging out.
I mean, even at my age, I'm not the pinnacle of health by any stretch of the word, but I still go to the gym 2 or 3 times a week, and I keep the body moving. You know, I think COVID had a lot to do with a lot of people got
couch potatoes.
Well, it's crazy. You would think that a worldwide pandemic would encourage people to be more healthy, but
it did
the exact opposite. Like, majority of people are sitting at home fucking shoving potato chips down their mouth all the time.
I was so bored during COVID that's when I picked up exercise really for the first time. I got to a point where during the actual quarantine, I was working out 4 hours a day so that I could eat whatever I wanted. And that's kind of still what I do. I just work out enough to where I don't feel guilty about eating a bag of chips.
As long as you can outrun your diet, you're good, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
I stayed outside. A lot of people just stay cooped up in the house. I turned my whole front yard into an extra room. We did everything out there.
We got out into the mountains and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one time you can go out and just be alone.
Right.
Out on this hiking trails and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, as much bad as there was with the pandemic, I think it did kick a lot of things into gear, like bands and just the need to do something.
Oh, I spent the whole time writing music. Yeah.
Well, that's what from doing this, we've heard a lot of bands say that's when they started. Mm-hmm. They started writing stuff. They hunkered down. They wrote things, and it was a lot of bands were born during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Early on this very podcast, when we were doing it in my garage, I was saying back then during the pandemic, there's going to be this explosion of creativity and art come from this. People are getting locked up, cooped up.
It's almost like the baby boom thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's nice to see it play out, and it's nice to be right about something. Yeah. But it is cool. We're seeing all these new bands, new music, bands that haven't been doing anything for a while, all of a sudden have new music out. It's been really, really cool to see this explosion of art.
Yeah.
And I think with a comparison to the Black Plague, after that we had the Renaissance. So we're on the verge of that.
There you go.
You know?
Yeah, good observation. Yeah, did a lot of this music get written during the pandemic?
After.
Yeah, it was after. Yeah. I feel like
after.
Because I was with the other band at the time.
Yeah, we were all still doing different things from each other during the pandemic, so... Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we were all staying busy writing music and playing shows, but we didn't all get together and start writing this stuff till the beginning of 2022.
Yeah,
2022.
Right on. It was just really a moment of refining skills till we all came together.
I will say that I think the pandemic helped all of us individually grow as artists and musicians, though, because I will say that even though I've known you all since way before the pandemic, I would say we're all very different people and very different artists.
Agreed.
Would you say you're taking it more seriously now, post-pandemic?
100%. I feel like within just the three, about to be 4 months we've been in this year, we've gotten more done as a band than we have the entire time.
We've always taken it seriously, but I think
that it's kind of hard to get that ball rolling when you're first starting out.
Yeah.
But once the ball starts rolling and the wheels are set in motion, it kind of seems like it goes.
Well, what you're describing is finding a rhythm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
When you find a rhythm,
found it.
Yeah. When you find that rhythm, man, you stay in that lane. You just keep grinding. Next thing you know, you look up and you know you're at the place you wanted to be. Or
we're getting to the point where we've got shows almost every weekend, and we've got we got to get this song out by this day, and we've got to get this merch refill. We've gotten to the point now where we're fortunate enough that we have loaded ourselves up with a very busy schedule and that there is always something to do. So we always got to stay focused and stay busy.
As long as you stay like that, you'll keep seeing good things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of new singles, you want to talk about the new song that we just heard?
Oh, yeah. We'd love to. So what you just heard at the beginning of this podcast was I Saw Death. This is going to be our second single, and it's going to be part of an album sometime. Oh, yeah. Maybe towards the end of this year.
Yeah, we decided to finally go forward with doing a full album, not just sticking to singles. Feel like we've drawn people in enough with those, and it's finally time for a full actual album people can sit down and make an experience out of listening to. So,
Do you have a full album's material ready to record?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's just a matter of making the time for it in between all the shows that we've got coming up. But
and the budget.
Yeah, and the budget, of course. But. Yeah, I Saw Death. It'll be the next single coming out sometime mid-April. We don't have an exact date set for it yet, but
look forward.
You can go into your Spotify or wherever.
Anywhere you can get it. You'll be able to find it.
Be ready for that update.
Exactly. Yeah. It'll be just like our first single. It'll be on every streaming service, YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, and unlike our first single, we're actually going to be doing a music video for this one as well.
Hell yeah.
Cool.
Kind of give people an extra layer of the song to where they don't have just something to listen to, but they'll actually be able to see us in a whole new kind of lighting, because there's some people out there that have heard our music but still haven't seen us live yet, so they've never even seen us. So we figure a music video gives people an extra chance to kind of get to know us a little bit more even before seeing us live.
Yeah, and look, don't fuck around. Come see them this Friday here at the Rooster. You can hear all of their songs. Yep. Talk to me a little bit about that experience of talking with people after a show. Doing the whole shaking hands.
It's one of my favorite things about this.
Yeah.
It's one of the most amazing feelings you could get. And there will be some days you walk off stage and you're like, I didn't play as good as I could have or not. Whatnot, but you just have people that are like, that's one of the best sets I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And it's really cool because you start to doubt yourself when you're up there, but as soon as you're off, like, it's nothing but love.
I mean, we couldn't do this without the fans anyway. I mean, we have an amazing support group, and we love meeting new people too. That's always one of my favorite things to do, is to meet someone who had never heard of us, didn't even come out to the show to see us in particular, but.
Well, that's an exchange.
The press had to come up and say something. That draws me back in and makes me want to keep doing this even more.
It's what he's about to say.
Yeah, it's an exchange. We all decided to come do this thing together. You guys decided to play. We decided to come see you play, and we got to have that exchange of energy, and then we get to have that personal touch at the end where, like, we're all doing this for each other. It's like without the fan, you've got no one to play to. Without you, the fans got nothing better to do, right? And then next time that you come around, now you've got a personal connection. Now you've got a reason, even more of a reason, to come see this band live and build on that relationship that you build. And like that, that's how you do it.
Exactly. Yeah. We always make time for anyone that wants to come up and get a picture or buy a shirt, get something signed, talk to us. I mean, even when we're exhausted, about to pass out coming off stage, there's never a time where, at least for me, that I won't stop and shake someone's hand or get a picture, because couldn't do it without the people that come out. So we'd do anything for our fans.
And it's really cool, doing this with the Rooster and doing shows with local musicians. You know, my wife and I, we've been to hundreds, if not thousands, of shows through the years, and we've paid up for like the VIP stuff. And every time you do that for these national acts, they kind of run you through this. They kind of rush you through to you shake someone's hand, you take a picture, and then you don't get to have a conversation with them.
Mm-hmm. Very impersonal.
Yeah, it's very impersonal, and And with these local shows, like, you're actually getting to have a relationship with the artists and, like, get to know them on a personal level. And it just, I don't know, for me, it kind of deepens the connection to the music. You know, you just, you root for the band a little harder, you know, when you know them personally.
It's a community. Yes. I mean, that's probably one of the most important things we need right now is, like, people. Yeah. Is, like, a space like the Rooster to come and, like, listen to some good music, meet some new friends, and just, like, have a good time.
That was a big motivating factor for getting this place open. Mm-hmm. I've said this before, too, is, you know, the community is at the heart of what I'm doing here. It's like, you know, I looked around, you know, 5-6 years ago, and I just saw how divided everyone was becoming and how, you know, how nasty people were to each other on social media. And just, like, I felt like this was something I could do to kind of combat the negativity. Like, let's do something that brings people together. Yeah. You know, and even still, even now, like, doing this and having that approach, I still find ways to piss people off or, you know, upset. And it's like, okay, well, I can't help you if you're just a negative piece of shit. Yeah. But, like, I mean, if you don't want to be that, like, this is the place for you, you know?
Yeah.
Don't be a dick.
Yeah.
But, you know, touching on that, that's another thing that I think, to me, is what makes the experience awesome is that, you know, nobody has to care. Nobody owes you anything. Nobody has to like your music. Nobody has to come see you play. But the fact that you're there and you do enjoy it and you love it is what means the world, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a really positive note. We should wrap things up right about
right.
Yeah, I love to end on a positive note. Do you guys want to do, like, some plugging before we wrap it up? And, look, if you fast-forwarded through the song at the beginning, we're going to put it again at the end. So if you made it this far and you didn't catch the song earlier, check out the new single from Fury 58 and tell them where to find you and what to look for, and we'll get out of here.
All right. So you can find our socials, Fury 58 on Facebook. Our Instagram is Fury 58 Band. Mm-hmm. And our new single, I Saw Death, will be out mid-April. Come out to the Rooster April 5th for our show with Spread Eagle to get a set date for that song.
Yeah, we should hopefully have an actual set date for when the single will be coming out by then. So, yeah, come out April 5th. Come see us with Spread Eagle and Pageant, Midnight Massacre. All those bands kick ass, and we know it's going to be a great time.
Let's pack it out for the Headbangers.
Woo! Right on. Peace and love.